Our greeting as Muslims is Assalamu Alaikum. Again, that greeting says, peace be unto you. We thank God, that is, we say Allah in the language of the Quran, our holy book. We thank Allah for our presence here, and we trust Him with our thoughts and with our intentions. And we pray that He always guide us and protect us from errors or from ignorance. We witness that He is one and He cares about all of His creation, everything that He has made in the skies and in the earth, and He cares especially about His human creation, the creation of the human family on this planet Earth. We are one family, as God says to us in our scriptures, that He made us from one soul, and He made of that soul two, a male and a female, and from them all men and women that populate the planet Earth. So we are forced to take seriously in these times, we are forced to take seriously our identity as a human family. Human beings are all one family, and the world was made big enough to accommodate all of us and to give us our needs, food, clothing, shelter, movement, exercise, pleasure for our souls and pleasures for our curious minds, intellects. But all that has changed now. We're running out of space. Too many people have populated the earth, and we are closing in on one another. We can no longer afford to ignore the existence of other members in the family. The world is becoming one world order, as they say. For some, that order may be an economic order. For some, it may be a political order. But for us, it's a community order. We are becoming one community, where we have to care about each other, be considerate of each other, and work for the betterment of the whole family, and be willing to make sacrifices, that is, not to have it all for ourselves, but to share with those who don't have. We have transportation, has progressed so much that we can connect almost within 24 hours, no matter where we are on this planet Earth, we can connect. Whereas in the past, not too many generations behind us, it took months and sometimes years, depending on your mode of travel, to reach the place you wanted to reach across the ocean or across the land, if the land was wide and spacious like Asia and some other lands that we are aware of. It would take months of travel before we could connect with the person we wanted to see or talk to. All that has changed. Scriptures, both our scripture, the Quran, the scripture of Muslims, and the scriptures of the Christian, the Bible, the Holy Bible, and the Holy Quran, both these books, they tell us of a time coming, and when we look at this time that we're living in, if we have any sense at all, we'll say the time has arrived. And what is this time? It is a time that will draw people together and would force people to respect the rights of their neighbors, a time when we will not be able to escape our actions or hide our doings. We will not be able to live on an island and dominate that island and mistreat the natives of that island, and it be secret or remain secret for as long as we live. Lord, if you do something on an island now, one of these major networks will know about it, and pretty soon they all will be reporting it on the 6 o'clock news. So we can't hide. We can't hide from each other. We are brought into one big living room where we can turn on our television and see what's going on everywhere in the world. So the time for us to become more human. Now, isn't this something? The time for us to become more human is right now. Time when we need to become more human in our thinking, more human in our feelings, more human in our planning for our future, more respectful of others while we are planning our future, more respectful of the future of others and how what we are doing is going to affect them. So this time is here. Every tub must sit on his own bottom. I know some of you Christians remember that. Every man will have to sit under his own vine and fig tree. These are Christian sayings, you know. And the Quran says there's going to come a time when man is going to have to face all that he has done. Now, most of us think this is after we are buried and put in the physical ground, you know, and put away for good forever. No, not necessarily. Whatever God tells us of our life, the nature of our life, and how our life is made to respond to the environment and to one another, whatever God is telling us in that focus, it's not just for the spiritual kingdom to come after the physical is done away with, but it's also for the spiritual life while we live on this physical earth. That these things are going to happen. God is saying, no matter what man does, bad and good, and no matter how ignorant he may be of God's plan, and God's plan we mean how God planned the natural order and how he planned the human order and how they affect one another and what conclusions there are in the future according to the plan of God, according to God's plan. This is what we mean by God's plan, what God has ordered. Yes, so no matter what we do, you know, and we do sometimes do our best, and we have good intentions, but it was not to last for long, because it couldn't anticipate natural progression. Nature is progressing at the same time we are progressing. Nature is progressing. We belong to nature, not only to our own thinking, we belong to nature. So we plan, and we find that later on these things we plan are no good for families in the neighborhood. We have to change the whole plan, reorder. We scrap that plan, you know, and tear things down and build all over again. But God knows ahead of time, because God planned it all when he planned natural world and the human world. When he planned the two worlds of man and the natural order, he knew exactly and he knows exactly what's going to be the conclusion of these things. So we're going to ask you to, if you are sensitive and if you care, we're going to ask you to make a commitment. Just make a commitment. Make a commitment to yourself, a private commitment. So I'm going to start working toward being more mindful of others and how I'm affecting others while I'm planning how I want to live and how I want to advance my life. So just make a vow. You know, we may not get but 1 out of 100. You'd be surprised what 1 out of 100 can do. Sometimes it only takes 1 out of 1,000 can change the whole land, you know. So let us make a vow that we are going to try to be more considerate of how we're affecting others with our own life and our own plans. And believe me, there's an urgency on us to do that. Yes. You know, I remember good old Southern parents, they raised their children very well. They would tell us, don't make a mess. Say, even if you don't mind being in that mess, be considerate of the next person. They don't want that mess in the house, or they don't want to have to face that mess, you know? So we have to be more considerate. The urgency is on us, I repeat, to be more considerate. What does it take? And all of us need a little more exercise than we're getting, you know? Very few are getting enough exercise. How much do we have to spend when we walk into a nice store in our neighborhood and we see trash that some person that didn't care and wasn't thinking just dropped a big piece of trash there, maybe left the chicken and the bones and everything right there in the doorway, and we'll step over it or get around or something and go right on in there? That's unconscious living. And God never made human beings for unconscious living. He made us for conscious living. And He'll punish us if we don't respect our good conscience, you know? So what does it take to take it up off the ground? You can't, don't see a trash basket. Say this was hurting your customers as they're trying to come into your door. Say, you have a place for me to put this trash, sir or ma'am? You know, how much does it take? Just a little bit. So if all of us would just try to be more conscious. Space, living space, is very important. It can change the way you feel. It can hurt your work day. You in a living space all cluttered up. God made you in your spiritual composition just like He made the sky above us. The sky is orderly. It ain't got trash all over it. It's an orderly sky where things look like perfectly arranged. If you study it scientifically, you can't find hardly any flaws in it. Then it seems to keep that pattern, just hold to the pattern. A beautiful, orderly sky above our heads. Now, I don't want to live up there. I want to live down here. But let's take the message of order from up there and incorporate it into our lives down here. Let us love order again, like the old folks used to tell us. Keep those things in order. I was a little young man, and I was studying Arabic, and the teacher gave us an Arabic primer, although I was a teenager at the time, about 15 years old maybe. He gave us an Arabic primer, and we were learning how to read and speak Arabic from this little primer. And one of the stories in the book was about parents teaching their children how to be responsible for their own possessions. And it said, "Da'a kulli shay'in fi mahalli," put everything in its proper place. I said, I heard that before. In fact, I got hit once by mama for not doing that. Well, the world needs this common intelligence that we should all have, but we lose it because of a hustle and bustle world, taking our attention from important things just to make it through the day, to have a check at the end of the week or end of 2 weeks, you know, or a month or whatever. So the world is putting a lot of demands on us to work for non-human things, inhuman things. So if you're spending all of your time trying to manage the burden of your relationship with machines and typewriters and other machines, you know, and going to the store to get something to eat, not to enjoy it, but just to survive. Because when you want something, the average person now, when they want to enjoy it, they go to a nice restaurant. But what you go and shop for, most of the time in the store, is just something for you to survive, just to help you survive. Oh, I need some this, I need some that, I need some that. So you put it in there. And you don't have no time to cook it, Harley, so most of the stuff you get is already pre-cooked or cooked, you know. You don't have time to cook. You're working a job and a half or two jobs, you know. The best you could do is look at the washroom and keep going, you know. Yeah, so your time is just taken by the world of physical things that are not human. And that can take away all of your natural human life if you don't work consciously on preserving it. You have to work consciously on preserving it. So we should understand that we live in a new time when the human beings are all being brought together, and we are challenged more now than at any other time by the need to stay a family and stay loving and caring about one another. And we should begin at home. As we're told, charity begins at home and spread abroad. That's the same message for Muslims in Islam. Charity starts at home and spread abroad. So start right in our homes and say, we share this space. And nobody's conscious in here but me. So I'm going to be the one picking up trash, putting it in the trash can or whatever. I'm going to be the one cleaning the mirror in the washroom, washing the soap dish, cleaning the soap dish, mopping the floor if I have to, until somebody else wakes up in this house. Yeah. You know? Yeah. We have to be prepared to make big sacrifices. The time is just that urgent. If you would care more about each other, you save money. When you don't care about each other, you're going to have a mental case in the family if you don't already have one. There's going to be a mentally sick person pretty soon in that family if you don't care about each other. So we have to care about each other, and caring about each other brings us closer together, brings us to love one another. A lot of us are suffering because we don't believe we are loved. Every time I see Mama, she's running out the door. And I can't get her to talk to me. She can't even talk to me. She's too much in a hurry all the time. And Daddy is the same. I can't hardly talk to him. He's gone. Daddy's not here most of the time. Conditions like that can drive people to be deranged psychologically, be deranged mentally. Yes. So let's stop and make great big sacrifices. I asked you on one of the first Sundays just recently to consider, if you're unemployed, consider donating your time. You got time. You ain't employed. Donate your time to your neighbor next door who's working. And doesn't have enough time to take care of his yard. Doesn't have enough time to walk his dog. Doesn't have enough time to paint his house. So tell him, I got plenty of time. Can you buy the paint, sir? If you buy the paint, I'll do it. And he might say, man, are you crazy? Say, no, but I was talking to a fella, and he said, idleness can drive me crazy. And so for my own health, will you permit me to do some work for you? You don't have to pay me unless you want to, you know? We have to come to that kind of mind, you know. And God is with us. Don't ever think God is not with us. In both religions, we are told, don't think God is not hearing you. God is always hearing. And don't think he's far away. He's always near. This is the teaching of our books, our holy books, the books of the Christians and the books of the Muslims. So don't never think God is not near and not aware and not caring about you. He's always caring about you. Because if he didn't care about you, you wouldn't have made it this far. Because justice would take all of us out. Yeah? You don't want justice. Believe me. You want mercy. Yeah? Justice would take all of us out. Be nobody around here. So just know that God is always caring about us, and let us strive to give more of ourselves to others.
You've been listening to Imam W. Dean Muhammad, the president of the Mosque Cares in Hazelcrest, Illinois. And now we would like to present to you a very special interview that was done with Imam W. Dean Muhammad by the editor of the Muslim Journal newspaper, Sister Aisha K. Mustafa.
Imam W. Dean Muhammad, president of the Mosque Cares, and we'll be discussing issues regarding this year's annual Islamic convention, But before we go to that subject, we'd like to have an opening statement from Imam W.D. Muhammad.
Alaykum salam. Bismillahi rahman rahim. That is, with God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. We begin always recognizing God, remembering God, and his messenger, Muhammad, the messenger of the Quran, the messenger of God in the Quran, the holy book, the last book revealed, and also the one that God describes in this book, in this holy book, as a mercy to all the worlds. He told us, and his sayings have been preserved, as most of the Muslims know, and what we call the hadith, collection or report on the life of Muhammad the Prophet, important things that he said and did. and in one of these sayings, it goes as follows. You will never have faith until you, you will never enter paradise, You'll never enter the garden of paradise until you have faith, and you will never have faith until you practice loving one another. This is a saying of Prophet Muhammad. Today in the world of religion, we have Christians and Muslims struggling to get closer and closer to one another. Organizations such as the one that I am a member of and a president of, WCRP, the World Conference of Religions for Peace, and many others that I could name, are working hard to bring the world community of religions together. We believe that religious people can, if we present the right picture, that we can help heal the sicknesses in our society, because most of the people, publics, they belong to some religion. The major religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, these religions all want the same thing. If we understand it, they want a good life for human beings. All of them want a good life for human beings. There are many other religions that I didn't name, the Jains and many others. They want the good life for human beings. So we have the same object for the public. We want a public that is healthy and at peace and in situation, good situation to progress their individual lives and also their collective interests. So this is the time for us to express the best that we have in our religion and speak to this need in the world to have people recognize each other, because we live in too close of confines now. The confines are too narrow and too close for us to ignore each other. We can't ignore each other anymore. We have to recognize each other, and we have to come from the best that we have in our religion and present it in the world, in the public, to the public's eye, the world's eye, so that we can support each other and not work against each other or ignorantly work against each other. I think it's ignorance that causes us to work against each other more than any other thing. Muhammad the Prophet also pressed us, as God had pressed him, concerning the respect and treatment we should give neighbors, the value of the neighbor. He said that God pressed him so much concerning the neighbor that he thought, he was beginning to think that the neighbor might inherit him. Now, if the neighbor inherit Muhammad the Prophet, that means the Muslims won't have him anymore. And that's happening to a degree, that's happening to a small degree. When I meet in Rome with the Christian leaders there, folklore leaders, and I met the Pope, as you know, when we meet these high-level people in Christianity, and I met them also among the Protestants and the Protestant community, we get the feeling that some of their educated ones are more seriously studying our religion to see the beauty in our religion than our own leaders are doing, on the whole, than our own leaders are doing generally. So that could possibly be, and we would not want non-Muslims to inherit our prophet and leave us without a prophet. So we should be concerned about our neighbor. Who is your neighbor today? When we have a one world order in terms of transportation, plane, travel by plane, etc. One world now. Economics, one world. Transportation, economics, communication, television, radio, one world, all connected now. And we have leaders sitting down discussing the United Nations is just a picture, you know. But the real thing that's happening is the work that's going on that connects all people economically and also economically and socially to agree, to a big degree, economically and socially to a big degree. And we might say politically, because the international authority is growing bigger and bigger, and national authority is growing smaller and smaller. So we should recognize this and understand what the prophet and prophets before our prophet wanted us to understand, and that is that God created the world, as Allah says in the Quran, to bring us together, to draw people together, to bring us together. Now we see the answer of that. We don't have to guess at what that means anymore. We see that the material interests have brought the world together into one world, to become one world. Transportation, communication, economics, mainly. So we can't dismiss any nation or any people from this concern for neighbor, because we all now have been brought close to one another, right next to one another, and we have to work with each other, live by each other as nations, live side by side as nations, work together as members of a one world order. So when the prophet says, be careful of how you treat your neighbor, today, to be in a good situation to practice this love and principle of our prophet, we have to regard every human being on this earth as our neighbor. And God has brought that about. Getting to the convention that we are having this year in 2005, I hope that this spirit will be the spirit of our convention. The spirit to work in the interests of all people, the spirit to recognize the rights of all people, and want economic justice for all nations, and want respect for all nations. I hope this spirit will be in the convention. We are going to be working in the time that we have up to the convention to give this message and to feed this spirit for our convention. But unity, the unity of mankind in Islam, is not without importance on individual rights and individual honor. God says, "Qad karamna kulli bani Adam." We have certainly made honorable, inscribed honor in the very making and nature of every human person, every son of Adam or every child of Adam. Individual respect for the value of the human person in his original content that God made is very important. And also, God wants us to know that we are entitled to our distinctions as race, as tribes, as race, family, beginning of family, tribes and race, and nations. God wants us to know that He have made us one, the same, in terms of our original human essence and composition. But He also created the world to make us different. He created this world to make us different. And He wants us to respect these differences and want us to build on the excellence of our own individualities. So we have the excellence of an individual person. Every individual should be encouraged to build upon that excellence, to grow more beautiful and more valuable to yourself, to your family, to your neighbors, to your community. We are Muslim body. We are a religious body. And God wants us to build upon the excellence of our religious family, the Muslim family,
as a religious group, as a religious people. He wants to build upon the excellence. So our convention has to recognize this, that we are there to celebrate the dignity of the human person, that's the individual. We are there to promote the excellence of the Muslim community, the excellence of the Muslim community. So this time, we won't be hearing from a lot of outsiders. It's good to make a gesture to let them know we welcome them and everything. We'd like for the mayor to come, if he can, or to send someone down and welcome us, to welcome our convention to Chicago again. But outside of that or beyond that, we are not looking to outsiders. We had planned to have Christian leader address our convention. But I made a big mistake. I was in the church speaking, and the assistant to the minister that we were going to invite got up and made comments, and I'm thinking that I'm in an AME church, mm-hmm. and I was not. Mm-hmm. So I was very interested in having someone from the AME church come and address our convention, because they are, in my understanding, they are the first African-American church.
Right.
Yeah, they're the first African-American church, and they were forced to have their own church because segregated churches at that time would mm-hmm. not accept them and treat them like equals. Mm-hmm. So they formed their own church, they have kept to their own church, and they have kept to their own spirit to advance the African-American people in spirit and in morals and in society. So they have a kind of interest very much similar to the one that I inherited from Nation of Islam, from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership. So we wanted them there, but we won't have them there, so we are not going to have them at mm-hmm. the convention. They will not be addressing the convention. We regret the disappointment to them, but we would not like to present something mm-hmm. That will not be in our plan and in our best interest. It's not in our best interest to give attention to those that just represent themselves, but don't represent a close connection with us. The AME Church would. They do represent the closeness to us, with us. We expect to hear more from youngsters. At this convention, we're expecting young leaders mm-hmm. to have a big role in the 2005 convention. We have the president of the National Muslim Youth Organization.
Okay.
He has organized professionally trained persons, males and females, who will be accepting responsibility. They're really sharing responsibility for organizing the convention mm-hmm. and seeing that the convention is a success. So the role of the youth, Muslim youth, is very strong in the upcoming convention. It's time, I think, for us to do that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was blessed to have Malcolm X come out of prison as a young man and become a very strong, powerful spokesperson for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. We know as a result of that, just one young man, as a result of that, the production of the Nation of Islam just began to multiply and multiply and multiply. We grew in numbers, we grew in productivity. I'm expecting that the same thing is going to happen when we turn a lot of the responsibility that we old veterans have over to these young people and let them do a good job for us, inshallah. Right. So we're looking to see to a very successful convention. And we are looking to a convention that will show us in our picture, in our own picture, and will inform, and a convention that will inform the members, every member who travel to the sites where we'll have it in Chicago, so that when they go back home, they will feel happy and relieved, they will feel refreshed, they will have firsthand knowledge of what we are doing as a community and where we are going, the productive things, where things are happening, like in Atlanta and other places where material growth is evident. We will bring that information to the members, and also show the members the road ahead, where we are going with business, with CPC, Comtrust, LLC, and with our plan to strengthen the educational system for our Clare Muhammad schools and everything. So we could bring this news to them. That's the purpose of the convention, to bring those who are scattered all around together, one place, and inform them of the state of our community, the serious problems that we face if we face them. I don't think we face any problem that's serious. The spirit of our community is beautiful. I travel a lot. I go to south, I go north, I go east, I go west. I travel a lot. I'm going to Philadelphia again pretty soon for a speaking engagement at the University of Philadelphia in Philadelphia. And I witness on all my trips a renewed spirit, a new spirit, a new excitement in the following we call the following that represents Imam W. Dean Muhammad's interest and what I would like to see happen for people, and especially African Americans in these neglected neighborhoods of ours, financially, business, economically neglected neighborhoods. So that's all I wanted to say, and I hope that we can get your assistance. I'm meeting with the media, with Muslim media. I hope we can get your assistance to get the right message out to the people. And please make this presentation I made 5 minutes instead of 25.
we'll take out the air. Really, ma'am, the theme for this year's convention is a what we call a rather loaded theme.
Yeah.
It reads, "Human nature, Earth's most valuable resource to our moderates and extremists. Honor cultural, ethnic, and racial distinctions. However, salvation resides in our human accord."
Yes.
Human nature as Earth's most valuable resource.
Yes.
Could you elaborate on that for us?
Yes, well, those who brought us from Africa to work the plantations,
yes, sir,
they understood that.
Okay.
And they capitalized on that.
Yeah.
They knew our nature.
Mm-hmm.
They got our nature under their control,
mm-hmm,
and they used our nature to make big dollars for them.
They built a nation on the wording to our moderates and our extremists. How do we identify our moderates, and how do we identify the extremists?
Well, that's left to the press, you know. Their voices are bigger than ours and more powerful. Whatever the press says extremists are, that's what that's extremists.
Okay.
And the moderates are those who have a different face.
Okay. So we'll look to the news and see who's on. In regards to our human accord. Right.
Yes. We meet with many religious people, and it's not just our interest. This is the interest of the great religions on this planet Earth, and decent human beings, period. The wife of the president during World War II, Eleanor Roosevelt, she's in the records, in history, as being like a pioneer for human rights. What motivates a person like that to want to see human treatment given to people around the world, or in those parts where she witnessed that human treatment wasn't given to the public, to their publics? What motivates a person like that? It is their perception of the human being in his common life and picture. Yes, all of us come here as babies. And the babies cry all in one language. And when they start smiling, they smile all in one language. They laugh all in one language. Sadness and joy is common for all human beings. We have that. So that tells us that we really have one common core. We have a core in common that makes us all human. That core, if we are appreciative of it, if we value it, we won't become drug addicts without hating it. We won't do violence in the streets and hurt others and ourselves without hating that behavior. You might be a victim of such behavior, but if you keep the precious picture of every human person, what every human person is, and that person is also in you, that exactly as it is in me or in another person, if you keep the picture of the common precious life that we all share as human beings, that's what we identify with. We say we are human. That's what we are saying. We are human. And we more importantly, we are not only connected emotionally and all that in one emotional life, emotionality, or one soul, but we are also having the same intelligence. No human being is born with a different intelligence. All of us are born with human intelligence. All of us have human intelligence. So this is the precious core. This is the core. And this is the accord that we want. We want people to be aware of that accord and to respect it. And we want to preach and promote that interest. We just don't want to leave it for others, to people that just have. We can't leave society for people to just come into consciousness of it. You go to school and they educate you. They teach you what society is. In elementary school, in high school, you come out of there, you're supposed to have a general knowledge, a good knowledge of what society is. So we should have a good knowledge also in our public of what the human being really is. And if we can keep that knowledge in the public, we can keep more respect for human life in the public.
Also, Imam Muhammad, this is the 30th year of your leadership, so it's really our 30th anniversary.
Yes.
With your leadership after the passing of your father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yes.
Will this play a part into the convention?
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. There will be a recognition of the 30 years of my leadership, and I understand that they're going to give me a walking cane or something for the 30 years.
A staff.
Yes, a symbol, symbolic gift.
Okay. I learned of your meeting of a young man in Philadelphia, and you were talking about him, Andrew James,
yes,
as a youth that you would be bringing to Chicago to participate.
Yes.
Could you tell us more about him and his involvement?
Yes, I met him at a high-tech education facility that's founded by African Americans, I believe. I know they're running. African Americans are running it, and mostly women, females, but males are right there with them, strong. They have a few non-blacks working with them too. So beautifully together, you just don't see anything but peace and harmony, and excitement. Yeah, I was excited because they're using high-tech computers and methods, high-tech methods. To educate uneducated children. They can bring an uneducated child who dropped out of high school or who didn't even finish elementary school. They bring him in there and expose him to their environment, education, for educating them, and they become excited. I saw them. I met many of the youngsters. They were very excited. And they are performing on levels like double. Say if he's at fourth grade, he's performing at eighth grade. Mm-hmm. They're performing like at eighth grade. Double. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was so impressed with that. But something came into the picture while I was there, and it was a young man. And he said, "Mr. Muhammad, may I bring something? May I make you aware of something if you're not aware of it?" I say, "Sure, do that." He said, "Are you aware of the murder?" I said, "Yes, I've been informed." The host for the occasion had informed us of the high rate of murders on the streets of Philadelphia. So I said, "Yes, I've been informed." He said, "Well, I want to let you know that there's young Muslim youth in the streets killing Muslim youth." Mm-hmm. I said, "I didn't know that." He said, "Yeah, he said some of your people are killing each other." Mm-hmm. I said, "I didn't know that." And So one of the ladies took over who was hosting us, and she began to tell us his role in that particular facility. That the facility also addresses street violence, gang violence, and that he had been very successful. So I was so impressed with their description of this young man, Andrew James. And he said, would you be willing to come and speak to us sometime, to the youth sometime? I agreed. And I'm going back soon to speak. They have already given me a date. But I said to myself, I'm much more interested in you coming to speak to our youth than I am in coming to speak to you all. So I finally invited him through Sister Amatilla Rashad, who arranged for us to see that facility, and he accepted. So inshallah, Andrew James will address us, and I'm sure he's not just going to bring us a message of violence. Mm-hmm. He's going to bring us hope and going to let us know what's working to bring some of these youth back to their good senses.
Okay. Also at this convention, we've always had an emphasis on business,
yes.
CPC, Graceline, Salam Nutrition, and also this year, will there be any involvement reference to the retail center, the groundbreakings that were made over in Markham?
Yes, we hope to have some actual work started at that site before the convention.
Okay.
So that when many who come here for the convention, they come to CPC, they come by there, even if they don't attend the function there, they come by and they see the property, they see the facility. So we hope to have something actually going on there in the way of construction.
Mm-hmm.
We will be bringing them a report, the convention report, on our plan for construction in this area in the southwest suburbs of Chicago.
Okay. And thinking about the youth again, yesterday in the park, in Marquette Park, we had taken it to the streets that was produced by Iman, a local organization, and they had Ilyasha Shabazz,
mm-hmm.
the daughter of Malcolm,
yes.
Shabazz.
Yeah.
I believe you met. What was your impression of her?
I saw her, she was a baby.
Okay.
Yes. We used to live in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is close to New York, you know.
Mm.
So Minister Malcolm used to come with Betty, his wife, used to come to Philadelphia occasionally, and I would go to New York occasionally, and it would be mostly to see Minister Malcolm. Mm-hmm. So Attila is his oldest daughter,
mm-hmm.
and Attila was the only child at that time,
mm-hmm.
and Layla was our only child at that time.
Okay.
So I remember seeing Attila and Layla on the floor crawling around.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So Kabila, she has grown up to be a very beautiful, beautiful, attractive girl, and she seemed to be very level-headed.
Yeah.
Very level-headed.
Yeah,
it made me feel so good to see her, mm-hmm. and I could see Malcolm in her. Tall like Malcolm.
Yes, yes.
I could see him in her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was, I think, 3 months old, she said, when her father got killed.
Yeah.
But she has a book herself, she said, I think it's pretty much closing the gap,
uh-huh.
and showing the human side of Malcolm, the father's
That's
side.
That's wonderful. I have to get that book, too.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of it. I'll get it. Inshallah.
Imam Muhammad, in closing, there are some things that are just on our minds and that come out of the news that, you know, and this being African-American issues, we see mm-hmm. that 50 years after Emmett Till was killed, mm-hmm. that finally his murderer was brought to justice. 40 years after the 3 civil rights workers were killed, their murderer was brought to justice. What perspective do you put on this that it takes? Is it okay that we have justice, even though it's so slow and coming about? What would be your words to the
mm-hmm.
youth
mm-hmm.
who look at the slow wheels of justice?
Yes. In our holy book, it's in the other holy books too, but in our holy book, it says God's justice is always coming. It's always coming.
Mm-hmm.
It may hit you all of a sudden, and then it may be delayed mm-hmm. for a long time. But whenever you get it, for you, it's suddenly.
Okay.
So look at that man. He lived to see 80 years. He's 80 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. And now he has to face it. He has to face what he did. Right. That horrible thing that he participated in. Against murder of Emmett Till. Mm-hmm. He has to face that now. I think that's the message, not only from man, but that's the message from God. Mm-hmm. That you don't escape. Okay. He can get you anytime. Okay. And the youth should not worry about their grievances against other people. We should be grieving more over our condition than anything else. When we look at our own condition, that's what makes me grieve, you know. Mm-hmm. And we're killing each other. It's not the whites killing us anymore. It's we're killing ourselves. So I would hope that the youth would try to also address the human accord and bring themselves in line with the best human nature mm-hmm. so they can save their life and their future.
And one last question, Imam Muhammad, as we reach out to other people, you know, the Latino community is a growing ethnic group, and here in Chicago it surpassed African American as the largest minority. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Yes.
Do you have any outreach in concerns or issues on the plans for the Latino community?
Yes. You know, I tend to philosophize, and it takes time. It takes a lot of words. Mm-hmm. You all do the editing, so. how do we get our identity? We get our identity by creation, mm-hmm. by natural life. Mm-hmm. We are born human. And we get our identity by socialization. And African Americans were forced to socialize with nothing but African Americans for a long period of time in the history of America. Mm-hmm. So we got our identity in slavery. Mm-hmm. We got our identity when we were freed. We got our identity of people working to improve our human conditions in a society that was discriminating against us and keeping us from opportunities. We worked together. So that's what makes us have a strong identity. We have a strong identity as people. It's not the blackness. I'm not as black as my youngest brother, you know, mm-hmm. and not as black as my son. My son is black, you know. I would call him black, and it would be right. The script, it would be true description to say his skin is black, you know. And my daughter is much lighter than I am. She's almost white, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's not our identity. That's not our real identity. The real identity comes from us sharing the same good things that happened over a period of generations after generation, mm-hmm. and the same bad things that happened over a period of generations after upon generation. Emmett Till, it left an indelible mark in me. It can never be erased, what happened to me inside me, because of Emmett Till. Well, I was marked inside, and many other African Americans marked inside, and we bear these same marks, mm-hmm. the marks of pain, the marks of happiness and jubilation or whatever, you know. So this is what makes us soul brothers. We are soul brothers and sisters. So the African American identity can be understood only as an identity of inner experiences that lift us up and that was trying to put us down. Hmm? Yeah. Okay. So Spanish people, you thought I forgot? I didn't. Spanish people, they have had a similar up and down. Mm-hmm. Hmm? Okay. Yes, they. I don't want to go into their history and point out the suffering the suffering that they have experienced, and under other people, they have suffered a lot under other people, like we have. And now God, for some reason, I think this is God's plan, that He has now the Hispanic people and us neighbors. Sharing the same areas, Chicago, in Chicago and other places. They live in their neighborhood, but we border on each other. And we have to run into each other often, every day almost. You're running into Spanish people. Every day I run into Spanish people. So we can't escape each other. And I have always had an interest in the Spanish people because of my father. Okay. My father, he was critical of us, how we wouldn't stand up for ourselves during the time when we had two laws in this country, you know, one for blacks and one for whites. And he said, you know, Zapata, and he named another Indian leader. Mm-hmm. You know, they talked to our black leaders and tried to show our black leaders that we had common cause, that the Mexicans or the Spanish people and the blacks had common cause, the Negroes, the so-called Negroes, he said, had common cause. He said, and some of us befriended them and got with them and then betrayed them. I don't know how true that story is, but somebody gave it to my father and he gave it to his audience. Yes. So ever since then, it was in me. I was no more than about 13 or 14 when I heard this from my father. About 14, maybe. So I felt a kinship, a special kinship with Spanish people ever since. And since I've learned of them more, as a grown man, I've studied and learned of them and seen them and interacted with some of them, with some of their leaders. I know it's a natural unity that we should have with the Spanish people. It's a natural unity.
The Mexican Cultural Museum here in Chicago in Pilsen will have about a 6-month run on an exhibit showing African roots in Mexico.
African
roots in Mexico.
Roots in Mexico.
The Africans ran away from slavery.
That's right.
And settled in Mexico.
Yes, I'm
so
aware
of
that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes. And also, I was happy to see that Reverend Jackson and African American leaders are also recognizing that we should have some ties with the Spanish people, Spanish speaking people, pardon me.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, Imam Muhammad, for your time today. And we invite.
Most welcome.
We invite our audience to learn more about the annual Islamic convention that's sponsored by the Mosque Cares that will be held at the Hyatt Regency at 151 East Wacker Drive in Chicago. And for more information, you may call their office at 708-798-4668. Thank you.